Sylvia Mook also had a file filled with requests to transfer. She was working on the floor and wanted an office job. She'd been at the plant for 5 years. Maria Ortiz was unhappy with the machines in the break room. She wanted Coke, and only Pepsi was offered. She also didn't like the brand of toilet paper in the ladies' room. She thought there should be assigned parking in the lot so you could find your car more easily. She worried about the air quality throughout the plant. And she wanted a transfer from the housekeeping crew to a job on the floor. There were 7 requests for transfer, all neatly stamped, declined. I used my phone to check my email. I called Morelli but got his voicemail. I glanced over at the vending machines. Maybe I needed to treat myself to a giant Reese's peanut butter cup. Peanut butter is healthy, right? I was scrounging in my bag looking for loose change when a text message came in from Ranger telling me my snooping days were over. I'd been recognized and reported to Bogart, and Bogart wanted me out of the plant. Thank God. I wanted to find the man who'd murdered Arnold Ziegler and the Bogart bar. I truly did. And I wanted to do a good job for Ranger. But geez Louise, I hated working the line and the loading dock. I shoved the files back into my messenger bag, tossed my trash, said adios to the break room, and headed for my car. Chapter 12. It was almost noon when I walked into the Bond's office. Lula was on the fake leather couch with her laptop. No Connie.
"What's up?" Lula asked.
I got outed. Someone recognized me and Bogart gave me the heave-ho.
"Did you get any ice cream?"
"No."
"Bummer. Next time you need to negotiate a better deal. You should have had one of them golden umbrellas."
"I think you mean golden parachute."
"Say what?"
"A golden parachute lets you gently float down to Earth."
"Mary Poppins could do that with a umbrella," Lula said. "What about Mary Poppins?"
The thing about Lula is that when she gets things wrong, they frequently make sense. I heard the door open behind me and saw Lula's eyes go wide. I turned and bumped into Ranger.
"Babe,"
he said, his hands at my waist to steady me. Even if I'd had my eyes closed, I would know I was smashed up against Ranger. He always smells great. He uses Bulgari Green shower gel, and the scent clings to him. I've used it, and it's gone by the time I'm done toweling off. His hand moved to my wrist, and he tugged me outside.
"I'm on my way to talk to Bogart," Ranger said, "but I wanted to talk to you first. Did you pick up anything useful while you were at the plant?"
"I didn't get to talk to a lot of people, but the general attitude is mostly mellow. No one seems to be overly concerned about the freezer meltdown, the tainted ice cream, or the Bogart bar guy. I read through the 5 files you gave me, and nothing really jumped out. 3 files were thick because of requests to transfer. You might ask Bogart about that. I didn't see anything in the employment histories as to why the requests were consistently turned down. No reasons were given. It occurred to me that we might want to take a look at new hires. If Mo Morris sent someone into the plant to sabotage stuff, it would have been just before all the bad things started to happen."
"I'll check on it," Ranger said. "Anything else?"
"Did you just take a shower?"
"This morning."
"You smell nice." A smile twitched at the corners of his mouth. He leaned in and kissed me. Our tongues touched, and I curled my fingers into his shirt. "Criminy," I said. He gave me a light parting kiss.
"You have my number."
"Oh, yeah." I watched him drive away, and I went back into the office.
"Criminy,"
Lula said. I nodded agreement. "So true. Where's Connie?"
"Courthouse covering for Vinny. I'm babysitting the office, but nothing's going on, so I'm working on my reality show. We're going to shoot it tonight. We did some preliminary test runs, but this is the real thing. I'm just going over the script one more time."
"I thought reality shows were unscripted."
"They're scripted unscripted. Not a lot of people know that. Just us on the inside," Lula said. "You want to hear my script?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"I don't want to have to think about you and Briggs naked."
"Yeah, I could see why that would be a problem with Briggs. He's not real attractive once you get his clothes off him. Not a lot to look at, if you know what I mean."
"Did we get any new FTAs?"
"A shoplifter and a mime."
"What did the mime do?"
"He pooped in the middle of the street, right at the corner of Hamilton and Broad.
Get out.
Cross my heart. You can look on his arrest sheet. Everybody was taking pictures. Traffic was stopped all over the place. He was trending big on YouTube when it happened, but it's dropped off some now. I'm surprised you didn't know about it.
Why did he do, you know what, in the middle of the street?
He said it was performance art. He said he was making a statement about our repressive society. Problem was, he repressed traffic because he was posing too long with his art, so he got arrested.
What were the charges against him? I asked Lula.
Obstruction of something and making a general nuisance of himself. Personally, if it was me, I couldn't see myself pooping in the middle of the street. Even if I had to go real bad, I'd be afraid I'd get run over. I mean, even dogs know enough not to poop in the middle of the street. You ever see a dog poop in the middle of the street? I bet a turkey wouldn't poop in the middle of the street, and I hear they're real dumb.
I agreed. Turkeys were known to be dumb. So, about the reality show, I said, where are you doing this?
Mill Street. I got a map worked out. We're going to start on the second block and work our way up to No Man's Land.
Are you insane? You'll die. Mill Street ran parallel to Stark Street, one block over. It wasn't as bad as Stark, but it was still pretty bad. Residential in a crack house kind of way for a block or two, and then mostly warehouses.
We got a plan, Lula said. We're shooting two blocks, and then we're faking the rest. I mean, it's dark out, right? Nobody's going to know where we are. We can just keep running around the same two blocks and do some creative camera work. And the good part is the cops won't go anywhere near there, so we haven't got no worries about the naked thing. Nobody's going to care we haven't got clothes on. All the people wandering around there are hallucinating anyways.
Good to see you've thought it through.
I got a mind for this, Lula said. I'm one of those underestimated people.
How are you going to film in the dark? Do you have lights?
You know Handy Howie, right? He's the guy who sells the handbags out of his Eldorado in the projects. Well, he's doing the cinematography. He's got an infrared camera. He's always wanted to make movies, so we're going to give him a film credit, and then after we're done with this, he can use it as a demo.
Wasn't he arrested for invasion of privacy?
He explained that to me, Lula said. He just got his first infrared, and he was learning how to use it, and he accidentally filmed some people in their bedroom. They were doing the nasty, and Howie said it was a shame the police confiscated that camera on account of it would have made a good documentary.
But he got another camera?
Yeah. Howie has connections. Handbags are his bread and butter business, but sometimes other stuff falls off a truck, if you know what I mean.
The back door opened and slammed shut, and Connie walked in. She dumped her handbag into her bottom drawer and kicked her 5-inch platform stilettos off.
These shoes are freaking killing me, she said. Your problem is you haven't got the right balance to your body to wear shoes like that, Lula said. You gotta balance out your boobs with your booty. Like, take me, for instance. I got just the right proportion of boob to booty. I could walk all day in those FMPs and never tip over. You got an imbalance of boob. It's one of them genetic things. Italians can grow boob, but they're deficient in booty. I got an advantage with my African tribal background and taste for macaroni and cheese.
I wasn't getting involved in this, but I suspected the tribal background wasn't a big player in the booty development. If I ate like Lula, I'd have a lot more booty. Anyone would have more booty. Connie swiveled her head to take a look at her ass.
So you think that's my problem? Connie asked. Either that or you bought your shoes too small, Lula said.
Connie took two files off her desk and handed them to me.
These just came in. They're low bonds, but they shouldn't be hard to clear out. I already told her about them, Lula said. I told her about the performance art guy.
He won't be hard to find, Connie said. He does stand up at the comedy club on Route 1 at night, and he works as a mime during the day. Usually he's hanging around the coffee shop by the state house. I read through the file. Bernard Smitch, 34 years old, graduate of UC Berkeley. Address listed as Under the Bridge. I knew this was bogus because the comedy club on Route 1 operated at a pretty high level. If Smitch lived under the bridge, he wouldn't smell all that good, and he wouldn't be let into the comedy club. I'd been under the bridge, and it wasn't pretty. Where does Smitch really live? I asked Connie.
With his mother in Princeton, Connie said. His father is a state representative. I think there might be a conflict there. Especially when he pooped in the street, Lula said. That's not politically correct.
I'm heading out, I said. I looked over at Lula. Do you want to ride along?
You going after Smitch?
Yep.
I'm in, Lula said. I'm all about supporting the arts.
We aren't supporting him, I said. We're dragging him back to jail.
Yeah, but we might support him at a later date when he gets out. I could go watch him perform.
I drove down Hamilton to Broad, went north on Broad, and turned onto State Street. The coffee house was on a side street off State. It was a perfect September day, and people were sitting outdoors. The mime was working, but no one was paying attention. I parked in a metered space across the street, and Lula and I watched the mime. He was dressed in classic mime attire of white face, black and white striped long-sleeve T-shirt, and slim black pants. He pretended to walk on a tightrope. He pretended to be stymied by a glass door. He poured himself a drink and pretended to be drunk. He rebooted and went back to the tightrope routine.
You watch this long enough and you get to wishing he'd take a poop, Lula said.
We got out of my SUV and I hung cuffs from my back pocket and stuck a small canister of pepper spray in the other back pocket. Lula was wearing a poison green spandex miniskirt that didn't have any back pockets, but she had her purse hanging on her shoulder, and God knows what all she had in that purse. I approached the mime and asked him if he was Bernard Smitch. He put his finger to his head and looked like he was thinking. While he was thinking, I snapped the cuffs on his right wrist. He looked at the cuffs and mimed with a stiff middle finger.
"Now that's not nice," Lula said to him. "That's rude miming."
He turned and mooned Lula and spanked his bare ass. Lula pulled her sun gun out of her purse, pressed the prongs to the mime's butt, and gave him a couple hundred volts.
Zzzt!
The mime went down like a sack of sand.
"Mime that," Lula said.
There was a smattering of applause, and then everyone went back to drinking coffee and eating their pastries. We snapped the other cuff on the mime, pulled his pants up, and carted him across the street. We maneuvered him into the back seat, and I drove to the police station.
"That was easy," Lula said. "Another day and another dollar."
"It would be best if you don't mention to anyone that you stun-gun the mime, since that's a little illegal," I said.
"Yeah, but he was being disrespectful."
"It doesn't matter. It's still illegal." I pulled around to the police station back door that led directly to the holding cells in the booking desk. I pressed the intercom button and told them I had a drop-off. Moments later, the back door opened and a guy in uniform came out. I'd seen him around. His name was Gary. I couldn't remember his last name.
"What have you got?"
Gary asked. "Bernard Smitch," I said. "He's FTA. I pulled my papers out of my messenger bag and handed them over.
Gary grinned. "I know this guy. He pooped in the middle of Broad Street."
Lula and I got out and more or less dragged Smitch out of the back seat and propped him up against my SUV.
"Is he okay?" Gary asked. "He's a mime," Lula said. "He's miming a seizure. It's one of his most popular routines."
"Looks to me like he might be miming that he got zapped with a stun gun," Gary said.
"It's possible," Lula said. "There's a similarity between the two experiences, and you never know with a mime."
We dragged Smitch into the building and cuffed him to a bench. I got my body receipt, and Lula and I returned to the bond office.
"Done and done," Lula said to Connie. "You guys are hot," Connie said. "You got Virgil, Diggory, and Smitch. Vinny's gonna be happy."
Lula looked over at Vinny's open door.
"Where is the little perv? How come he's not here?"
"Good question," Connie said. "Don't know the answer. He tends to wander into murky waters when Lucille goes out of town."
"I hope he's not looking for another duck," Lula said. "I try to be open-minded about people's needs, but that was disturbing. I doubt that duck was consensual."
"Gosh, look at the time," I said, checking my watch. "I need to get home in case Morelli wants me to make dinner for him."
"Me too," Lula said. "I gotta get ready for my filming. I gotta glitter up my eyelids, and I want to go over the script one more time."
Connie wrote me a check for the mime catch.
"What are you making for dinner?" she asked me.
"Hot dogs."
"Can't go wrong with hot dogs," Lula said. "What are you going to serve with them?"
"Beer."
"That'll do it," Lula said.
A text message from Ranger dinged on my cell phone.
"Now what?"
Lula asked. "I'm supposed to meet Ranger at Mo Morris Ice Cream tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
"That's the good ice cream place," Lula said. "That's where they give you free ice cream."
"Why are you going to Mo Morris?" Connie asked. "I thought you were at Bogart solving security issues."
"Harry Bogart thinks Mo is behind all the disasters at his plant. Ranger's sending me in to see if I pick up any bad vibes.
How's he going to get you in there? Lula asked. I thought it was impossible to get a job at that plant.
I shrugged. Dunno. It's not my problem.
Yeah, Lula said. Your problem is trying to look good in a shower cap and paper onesie.
I squelched a grimace, took the check from Connie, and headed out. Truth is, I wasn't going home to get ready to wow Morelli with my culinary skills. I was going home to take a nap and reassess my life. Chapter 13 Rex was in his soup can when I walked into my kitchen. I tapped on the cage and said hello. Nothing. I dropped a peanut into his cage. He rushed out of the can, stuffed the peanut into his cheek, and rushed back into his can. Okay, that was fun. I ate some olives and a couple handfuls of Fruit Loops. I lifted the lid on my brown bear cookie jar and looked in at my gun. Probably Briggs was right. I should get rid of the gun and buy some cookies. I wasn't opposed to gun ownership. I just didn't feel comfortable shooting people. And it would be nice to have cookies. Morelli showed up at 4:30 with Bob. We took Bob for a walk, came home and fried up the hot dogs and downloaded a movie, Domestic Bliss. At 9:30, we were about to migrate to the bedroom and take the bliss up a notch when my mother called.
"Is your grandmother with you?"
she asked.
"No. Is she supposed to be with me?"
"I was brushing my teeth, and I heard the front door open and close. I looked out the window and saw your grandmother get into a red car that looks like the one Lula drives."
Oh, boy.
"I hope she's not going to another one of those Chippendale shows with Lula," my mother said. "She almost got arrested last time when she got up on stage to dance with them."
"I don't think the Chippendales are in town."
"Well, you need to go find your grandmother and bring her home before she gets into trouble."
"No problem," I said. "I'll track her down." Morelli looked at me with one eyebrow raised.
"I don't like the sound of this."
"Lula is shooting her reality demo tonight, and I think Grandma has volunteered to be part of the production team. My mother said Grandma just got into a red car that looked like Lula's Firebird."
"Is that so bad?"
"They're doing a demo for Naked and Afraid, the Trenton version." Morelli cracked a smile.
"You're kidding. Who's going to be naked?"
"Lula and Randy Briggs."
"Whoa."
I got my messenger bag from the kitchen, and Morelli followed me.
"I'll ride along with you,"
Morelli said. "No way. You're a cop. You'd have to arrest Lula for being naked."
"Where are they shooting this?"
"Across town," I said. "Don't worry. I won't be long. I'll go get Grandma, bring her home, and be back in a jiffy." I took the stairs and ran to my car. I wanted to get to Mill Street before they started filming. Not only didn't I want Grandma near Stark Street, I was afraid Grandma would be the second naked woman. There was minimal traffic, but I hit every light going across town. By the time I got to Mill Street, I was white-knuckle on the steering wheel. I tried calling Lula, but she wasn't picking up. It was a cloudless sky with a sliver of a moon. Not a lot of light on Mill. Streetlights had been shot out long ago, and most of the buildings were shuttered at night. There were rooming houses on the lower blocks, but eventually they gave way to commercial-use warehouse-type structures. Lula had said they'd be filming on the edge of the residential area. I found them on the third block. They were huddled beside a van. Lula's Firebird and a silver Honda Civic were also parked there. They were in front of a graffiti-spattered three-story building that had at one time been apartments but was now boarded up. I parked in front of the Civic and walked back to the van. Howie was there with a handheld camera. A large woman with cornrows and braids halfway down her back stood next to Howie. She was wearing an apron with a lot of pockets. When I got closer, I saw that they were stuffed with makeup brushes and assorted cosmetics. One of the pockets held a large can of hairspray. Another pocket held a large nickel-plated semi-automatic. The gun caught the moonlight and sparkled like a piece of jewelry. Grandma, wearing black Pilates pants, a black sweatshirt, and a fanny pack, was holding a flashlight and standing next to the makeup woman. The barrel of Grandma's .45 stuck out of one end of her fanny pack. Lula and Briggs were naked. They were listening intently to Howie.
"This is a big opening scene," Howie said. "You're going to stand on the stoop of this apartment building, and you're going to look excited, anxious to start your adventure. Grandma's going to highlight you with the flashlight, and I'll pan in for a close-up."
Excuse me, I said. My mother sent me to get Grandma.
Good thing you're here, Lula said. Loreen didn't show up, and we need someone to work the clacker.
What's a clacker? Howie handed me a small chalkboard.
It's this thing, he said. You write the number of the scene on it, and then you say, scene one, take one, and you clack the wooden frame down.
It's a real important job, Lula said. It keeps everything in order.
I'm not staying, I said. I just came to get Grandma.
I can't go, Grandma said. I have to shine the flashlight during close-ups.
We're losing time, Howie said. Everybody on their marks.
Lula and Briggs went to the stoop.
You gotta scooch down a little, Howie said to Lula. I can't get both of you in the frame.
How about if I just pick the little dwarf up, Lula said. You touch me and I'll be on you like a badger ripping apart a rodent, Briggs said.
That's good, Howie yelled. Already we got drama. Grandma, get the flashlight on him.
We can't start yet, Grandma said. Nobody did the clacky thing.
Everyone looked at me. Oh, for crying out loud, I said. Scene one, take one. And I clacked the clacker. Grandma rushed in with the flashlight. Howie shouted, action! And Lula and Briggs mugged for the camera.
Cut! Howie yelled. Grandma, you're supposed to be shining the light on their faces. You're shining it on Randy's dick.
It's one of them uncontrollable things, Grandma said. I can't stop staring at it. I never get to see men's parts anymore.
Lula looked down at Briggs.
There's not much to see.
Yeah, Grandma said. I remember them as being bigger, but it's still hypnotic the way it's moving around.
I'm excited, okay? Briggs said. This is what happens when I get excited.
Now that everyone called attention to it, I find it distracting, Lula said. I can't do my best emoting under these circumstances.
Cripes, Howie said. Now you have me staring at it.
Maybe it would help if you put some powder on it so it's not so noticeable in the moonlight, Grandma said. It's not the moonlight, Briggs said. It's a stupid flashlight.
The makeup woman rushed in and powdered Briggs's dick.
Hold it still, she said. I can't do nothing with it bobbing around.
Listen up, Howie said. We're all going to ignore the dick.
I'm good with that, Grandma said. I've seen enough.
Here's the plan, Howie said. After I get a close-up of Lula and Randy, they're going to start on their way around the block. I'm going to follow them as they creep forward. When they move to the next block with the burned-out warehouse, they get more wary. This is where they're on alert for urban dangers. I got a couple dangers planned out, but they're going to be a surprise.
I don't like snakes and dead people, Lula said to Howie. You better not have any of them in your plan.
I rubbed out take one on my chalkboard and wrote in take two. Yada, yada, I said, and I clacked the clacker.
Action!
Howie yelled. Lula and Briggs walked down the street. They were bare-assed and barefoot, and it was dark. Mostly the only thing visible was the little red light from the infrared camera following after them.
I don't like this, Briggs said. I can't see where I'm going, and I don't know what I'm stepping in. I just stepped in something squishy.
Wah, 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 Lula said. You gotta get tough. We got a rocky road ahead of us. We gotta find our way out of this urban jungle.
Get ready, Howie whispered to Grandma. The first life-threatening danger is coming up. You have to get some light on their faces.
Lula and Briggs were creeping along. I saw movement in a doorway to Lula's left, and a woman threw a cat out at them. It bounced off Lula and landed on its feet.
Grr, pfft, meow.
What the freaking Sam Hill? Lula said. That sounds like a wildcat. It's one of them vicious killer wildcats.
Lula was jumping around, waving her arms in the air, not sure which direction to run. She stepped back, crashed into Briggs, and knocked him on his ass. Grandma flashed the light on Lula and then on the cat. It was a fluffy white cat with a pink collar.
It don't look like a killer cat, Grandma said. It's a pussy cat.
Well, I hate cats. I'm allergic to cats, Lula said. And anyways, you never know which one of them is a killer.
She bent down to pick Briggs up, and she farted.
Cut!
Howie yelled.
What do you mean, cut? Lula asked. You keep yelling cut, and we're never going to get done with this thing.
You farted, Howie said.
It's a human dilemma, Lula said. You telling me you don't fart?
Not on camera, Howie said.
Well, excuse me, Lula said. It was my body releasing all my pent-up frustration. It's not like this here's a perfect filming experience for me. Every time I turn around, Short Stuff got his nose in my business, but I'm not acting like some prima donna and complaining about it.
Maybe I don't like that your business is always in my face, Briggs said. You ever think of that?
A woman came out from the doorway and scooped up the cat.
Good kitty, the woman said. Good job.
She looked over at Howie.
Will you need Snowball anymore?
No, Howie said. We're done with Snowball.
I think I skinned my ass when Sasquatch knocked me over, Briggs said. Someone look and see if I'm bleeding.
Excuse me for knocking you over, Lula said, but it was a frightening experience, just like it was supposed to be. It was supposed to point out the dangers of moving around in a city where you got cats and shit. I bet we got some good film on that. Like I had fear going. That's genuine emotion.
Howie ran the footage back.
What I got is Grandma on camera saying it's a pussycat.
Maybe we could put a sex spin on it, Lula said.
It's Grandma, Howie said. We're not supposed to see her or hear her. You ever hear or see any of the crew on the real show? No. It's got to look like people are out there alone, naked and afraid.
You told me to light their faces, Grandma said. How am I supposed to do that if I don't move in?
You put the light on the cat, Howie said.
Grandma narrowed her eyes and stood her ground.
I thought people would want to see it. Could we get on with this? Briggs said. I'm getting cold. Between the cat fiasco and the night air, I'm getting shrinkage.
Gee, look at the time, I said. I have to be running along with Grandma now. I promised my mom, and Morelli is waiting for me. We wouldn't want Morelli to come out here to get me. He might have to arrest the naked people.
Who's going to work the flashlight if I leave? Grandma asked.
It's going to be a problem. We got a skeleton crew, Howie said. Give your flashlight to the makeup hoe. I guess she can do it.
Grandma handed the flashlight over and followed me to my car. Sorry I had to ruin your night, I said to Grandma, but Mom was worried about you.
It's okay, Grandma said. The flashlight was running out of batteries anyway. It was getting real dim. And if you ask me, I don't think anybody back there knows what they're doing.
I dropped Grandma off and returned to Morelli.
How'd it go?
He asked. Mission accomplished. Grandma's home safe and sound. Anything interesting happen here?
No, but if you didn't show up soon, I was going to start without you.
After seeing Lula and Briggs in the all together, I'm not feeling especially romantic.
Cupcake, when you see what I've got to show you, it'll all be forgotten.
That sounds promising.
The first thing we have to do is get your clothes off.
Wait a minute, I said. I thought you were going to show me what you've got.
Even better,
Morelli said. He got rid of his shoes and socks, stripped off his shirt, and shucked his jeans. He was wearing blue plaid Calvin boxers. He cuddled me up close against him and let me look inside the Calvins. He was right. Poof. No more Briggs. Chapter 14 Morelli was gone by the time I made my way to the kitchen Friday morning. I was supposed to meet Ranger at 8 o'clock. That meant I had to leave my apartment at 7:30 at the latest. I wasn't sure how to dress, so I'd chosen dressy black jeans, a blue V-neck sweater, a black blazer, and black Skechers. It was one of my go-to outfits when I worked for Rangeman. I gave Rex fresh water and a couple hamster crunchies. I looked at my watch. It was 7:30. I grabbed my messenger bag and a frozen waffle and took off. Ranger was waiting in his Cayenne toward the back of the Mo Morris ice cream lot. I parked beside him, and we both got out to talk. "How's this going to happen?" I asked him. "I hear it's impossible to get a job here. No one ever quits."
"Morris is also interested in increasing security in his plant. He's approached me to take a look, and he's very vocal about playing no part in the problems across town. He's agreed to let you come in undercover. All he asks is that he's kept in the loop. He wants to know if we find hard proof that someone in his organization has gone to the dark side."
"Does this mean I'm a double agent?"
"Think of yourself as an investigative operative."
I thought the title was kind of fancy for someone who was probably going to be wearing a shower cap. "How do I get started?" I asked Ranger.
"Park your car up front in visitor parking. Use the front entrance and ask at the reception desk for Vicky. She'll be your inside contact. You'll work the line today. Morris runs his plant 6 days a week, so Vicky will find a job for you tomorrow as well."
"Did you ever find out who told Bogart about me and got me kicked out of the plant?"
"It was one of the women on the line. You went to school with her daughter, and she knew you worked as a bounty hunter. She thought you were in there looking for a skip. Bogart was never comfortable with an undercover operative and used it as an excuse to get rid of you. Things should be different here. Morris was in favor of putting someone in place to look around.
His watch buzzed, and he glanced at the message.
I have to go, Ranger said. I'll be in touch.
He gave me a quick kiss and took off. I licked my lips. I really was going to have to stop the Ranger kissing. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe next week. I got back into my car, drove to the front of the building, and parked in visitor parking. The front of Morris's plant was nicely landscaped with flower beds and shrubs. The grass was green and perfect. I looked more closely and saw that it was artificial. Fake grass, fake flowers, fake shrubs. I liked it. It gave the building a theme park quality. I pushed through the large glass door into the lobby and went to the desk. Everything was bright and colorful in the lobby. Orange couches, white tile floor, lamps that looked like 6-foot ice cream cones, and an old-fashioned ice cream pushcart filled with ice cream cups that were free for the taking. The Mo Morris theme was written in large red letters across one of the walls. Our ice cream is Mo better. There was a young man behind the desk. He was dressed in a white ice cream vendor uniform. I told him I was there to see Vicky, and moments later, Vicky appeared. Vicky was also wearing the white ice cream vendor uniform. I followed her down a hall to the women's locker room. She assigned a locker to me and gave me the key. I understand you have experience with the cup dropper and filler, she said, so I thought we'd start you there. That way you can look around without the pressure of learning a new job. I felt my eyes glaze over at the thought of the cup dropper and filler. I nodded and attempted a smile. Oh, boy, I said. The cup dropper and filler. Of course, everyone on the floor wears a sanitary uniform, Vicky said. You'll find one in your locker. Once you're suited up, just go through the door labeled Yummy Town. It opens to the manufacturing area. I'll be waiting on the other side. The Mo Morris uniform was almost identical to the Bogart uniform, but it was orange. The slogan printed in black over the door to Yummy Town said, Orange, you happy to be working in an ice cream factory? If I opened the door and saw Oompa Loompas working the line, I was going to run like hell and never come back. I peeked out and saw that it looked a lot like the Bogart factory. One large warehouse-type room with a lot going on. No Oompa Loompas in sight. Vicky led me to the cup dropper and filler machine and said she'd be back at 10 so I could take a break. After an hour of looking at the cups going by, I found myself dozing off on my feet. I jumped around a little and I sang the Pharrell Williams happy song. Vicky came over and asked if I was okay because she'd noticed I was clapping my hands and dancing. I told her I was being happy, and she went away. Three cups came down crooked. I fixed them and realized that they were all coming down crooked. I couldn't set them right fast enough, and down the line the ice cream was plopping onto the side of the cup and oozing over onto the conveyor belt and onto the floor. I looked for the red button that stopped the line and called the foreman, but there was no red button. There were a bunch of switches and a green button. Hey, I yelled. Yoo-hoo, somebody? No one could hear me over the machinery. I held my breath and flipped the first switch. The line sped up. Cups were coming down one after another and moving along the belt at warp speed. Ice cream was flying all over the place. The floor was inches deep in ice cream. A large woman rushed over, threw a switch on the side of the conveyor belt, and everything came to a grinding halt. What on earth? She asked. There's no big red button, I said. A man hurried over. He was dressed in one of the white vendor uniforms, and he had a medal pinned to his jacket. He slipped on the ice cream and went down to one knee. He got up, and I saw that the medal said Big Shot. I guess that meant he was a boss of some sort. No red button, I said to him. He looked confused. She keeps saying that, the woman said. She keeps saying there's no red button. Vicky ran in. She's new, Vicky said. My bad. I assumed she knew how to run the machine. There's no big red button, I said to Vicky. No problem, Vicky said. I was coming to get you anyway. There's a man here to see you. Ranger was waiting for me in the break room.
Babe,
he said, his attention focusing on the orange shower cap. If you so much as crack a smile, I'm going to hit you.
I have good news and bad news. The good news is that you can lose the orange after today. You're going back to Bogart.
Gee, I just got here.
Yeah, I know you're broken up about leaving, but we have a situation across town. The bad news is that the loading dock foreman was found dead in the freezer this morning.
I felt myself go into suspended animation for a beat. Disbelief that another Bogart employee was frozen. A sense of dread that it was true, and that I knew the man. Gus? I asked.
Yes, you worked with him yesterday.
There was still disbelief. How did it happen?
The ME didn't see any sign of trauma. It looks like Gus got locked in and froze to death.
That's impossible. The freezer door always opens from the inside.
Someone tampered with the lock. There's no cell reception in the freezer, but Gus left a message on his phone. He said he went in to do inventory and couldn't get out. The time on the phone was 5:10.
My heart was beating hard. It could have been me. I was in and out of that freezer all morning. The door was working perfectly.
It was also working perfectly for most of the afternoon. A truck came in at 1 o'clock, and it took 3 hours to load it. No one had any problems with the door.
No one noticed that Gus was missing?
Butchie clocked out at 4:30 p.m. The Jolly Clown clocked out at 7 p.m. He said he tried to put his unsold ice cream back in the freezer, but the number code wouldn't work, so he used a small auxiliary freezer in the storeroom.
He didn't think it was odd that he couldn't get into the freezer?
He thought it was inconvenient, but not odd. He said it wasn't the first time he couldn't get into the freezer. He said Gus was an idiot, and Bogart was a cheap bastard who never fixed anything, and he wondered who he should see to apply for the foreman job.
He's been trying to get out of the clown suit for years.
Not going to happen. I asked Bogart about the denied request to transfer. It's company policy straight from Bogart not to move people around. No exceptions. He hires from the outside for new jobs, or he promotes within departments. The clown is a department of one. He isn't going anywhere.
What about Gus's family?
He lived alone, divorced, two kids that live out of state.
I hate this, I said. It's ugly and horrible and sad, and I'm in the middle of it, and I can't even eat a Bogart bar and feel happy.
Babe, Ranger said.
I blew out a sigh. Criminy. Ranger wrapped his arms around me and held me close.
It's what we do. We wade in and try to make things a little more safe.
I know, but I'm having a shortage of happy.
I could fix that.
Your fix would create a whole other set of problems for me. I stepped away. So, how do I fit in across town?
Bogart wants you back. He's scared. This is the second employee death, and it looks like another murder.
I don't see where I'm doing anything helpful. I'm not good at the spy thing. I hardly get to talk to anyone.
Keep your eyes open. You're getting jobs that don't require a lot of concentration. Look around. Look for things that don't make sense. An employee with too much money. Someone who's out of place. Someone who has all the right access to the trucks, the freezer, the storeroom.
That would be everyone. Bogart runs a very loosey-goosey operation. Everyone has access to everything.
I have the list of new hires, Ranger said. There are only 3 in the appropriate time period.
I looked at the list. Gina Slater was hired and placed on the line 6 months ago. Maureen Gooley joined the housekeeping crew at about the same time. William Butchie Boone was placed on the loading dock a little over a year ago. I'd like to see more on Boone, I said to Ranger.
I'll have a full report sent to you. Tomorrow Bogart's plant production is closed. CSI will be crawling all over it. The only one working will be the jolly Bogart clown. You can ride along with him.
I slid a glance at the door to the plant. It's sort of a mess in there. One of the machines malfunctioned.
That would explain the ice cream all over your orangeness.
I looked down at myself. There was no big red button.
Babe.
I ditched the orange suit and explained to Vicky that I'd been reassigned. She gave me a pint of ice cream and said everyone would miss me, and they were sorry I couldn't stay longer. She made an admirable effort, but underneath it all, I knew she was relieved to see me go. I mean, really, who wouldn't be? I took my ice cream to my car, chugged out of the Mo Morris ice cream parking lot and drove to the office.
I thought you were a Mo Morris today, Lula said when I walked through the door.
It didn't work out, but I got some ice cream.
That's my kind of job, Lula said. Work a couple hours and get some ice cream. What flavor?
Vanilla.
I like vanilla, Lula said.
I got spoons for Lula, Connie, and me, and we finished off the ice cream. How'd it go last night? I asked Lula.
It went pretty good. There were a couple things that didn't go exactly right, like when we were supposed to find shelter for the night, and we picked an abandoned building, and Randy got bit by a rat.
Oh, my God!
At least we think it was a rat. It was dark, and we couldn't get a good look at it. It was one of them bite-and-run things. It didn't sound big enough to be a crackhead.
Is Randy okay?
Yeah, he was all hysterical for a while, but he calmed down after we took him to the clinic and got him a shot.
Anything else go wrong?
While we were making our way to our final destination and going around the block, someone stole Howie's van. We should have seen that one coming. It wasn't as bad as it might have been on account of it turns out Howie stole it in the first place. It's just that it had all our clothes in it.
How'd you get home?
We called an Uber car, but it wouldn't let us in naked, so me and the makeup hoe walked over to Stark Street, and the makeup hoe traded some services for a ride.
Good thing you had a makeup hoe on the team, Connie said.
Truly, Lula said. Otherwise, I might have had to come out of retirement.
But you got your demo film, right? I asked.
Yeah, Howie is editing it for us, and then we'll send it in. We got some real good stuff on it. Those naked and afraid people would be nuts not to sign Randy and me up for their show. But just in case they don't like this reel, I got a backup idea. Naked bungee jumping. I figure we could go off the bridge over the Delaware, the one that says Trenton makes and the world takes.
Connie and I were mouths open, eyes glazed. I actually felt my mind go numb for a beat.
I bet nobody sent them a demo for naked bungee jumping, Lula said.
My cell phone buzzed with a text message. It was from Sherelle. Just saw Winkle having lunch in Fat Dave's.
Saddle up, I said to Lula.
Eugene Winkle is in Fat Dave's.
And,
Lula said,
and we're going to bring him in. How are you going to do that? You got an elephant gun? You got Ranger in the trunk of your car?
I have you. I'm going to send you into Fat Dave's, and you're going to charm Winkle.
That might not be a bad idea, Lula said. I am charming. I could charm the ass off him.
Exactly. And then we convince him that once we get him rebonded, he's going to have a really good time.
He might even know my reputation, Lula said. I was known for doing quality work back in the day. Of course, we aren't really going to show him a good time. Unless he got some hot qualities. Then I might think about it.
Chapter 15 Fat Dave's is a hamburger joint on the second block of Stark. It's dark and dingy and has grease running down the walls. It also makes the best burgers in Trenton. I was on Stark looking for a parking place, hoping I wasn't too late to catch Winkle.
You know the secret of Fat Dave's burgers, Lula said. It's duck fat. Not many people know that on account of it's a secret. He slicks his griddle up with duck fat, and it imparts that excellent gamey taste, and then he uses extra salt. Salt brings out the flavor of shit.
I found a parking place on the third block, and Lula and I walked back to Fat Dave's. We looked in through the large plate glass window and saw that Winkle was still there. We could tell by his gargantuan body overflowing the counter stool. You go in first, I said. You do your thing, and then I'll come in and close the deal. Lula sashayed in and sat next to Winkle. I gave her 5 minutes, and then I went in and joined them. I had plastic cuffs stuffed into my jeans waistband hidden by my sweatshirt and a canister of pepper spray in my sweatshirt pocket.
Well, look who's here, Lula said. It's my friend Stephanie.
Winkle gave a sound that was like a bull snorting. He had an empty plate in front of him, and there was ketchup everywhere. He was working on a basket of French fries.
This is my new friend Eugene Winkle, Lula said to me.
Eugene gave another snort and shoved French fries into his mouth. Is Eugene ready to party? I asked Lula.
Eugene's thinking about it, Lula said. He's got to finish his fries first.
Did you tell Eugene about the deal? Eugene looked at me.
What deal?
Lula likes handcuffs.
Yeah, Lula said. I'm thinking about going into dominatrixing. I like to give a little, and then I like to get a little.
Oh, yeah?
He said.
What do you like to get?
I'm pretty much into spanking, Lula said. Are you any good at that?
Do I have to get spanked first?
Yeah.
And then I get to spank you?
Yeah.
He shoved a wad of French fries into his mouth.
Let's go.
First, we have to cuff you, I said. He threw a 20 down on the counter and held his hands out.
Do it. This is going to be good. I'm going to spank you hard when it's my turn.
I like that, Lula said. Nothing I like better than a hard spanker.
She looked over at me.
Make sure you pull those plastic cuffs real tight.
I had them around Winkle's wrist, and I went for a second. I'm doing double.
What are you going to use? He wanted to know. Are you going to use a switch or a paddle?
I looked at Lula and read her mind. She was thinking she would use a couple thousand volts of electricity. We walked Winkle to my car and secured him into the back seat. He had his hands double-cuffed behind his back. Lula was in the front seat with her hand wrapped around the stun gun in her purse. I had one eye on the road and one eye on Winkle in my rearview mirror. If he somehow managed to get out of the cuffs, I was going to stop the car, jump out, and run like hell.
Where are we going?
He asked.
I got a place on Clinton Street, Lula said.
I don't like Clinton Street, Winkle said. That's where the police station is. Hey, wait a minute.
Drive faster, Lula said to me. A lot faster.
I think you tricked me, Winkle said. You don't want to get spanked. I bet you're cops. I don't like this. I don't like being tricked.
Lula reached over the seat with her stun gun, and Winkle headbutted her. Lula knocked against me. I jumped the curb and crashed into a streetlight. By the time I fought my way free of the airbag, Winkle had disappeared. Lula and I got out and looked at my car. The front was smooshed in where it had hit the pole.
It's not so bad, Lula said. The wheels look okay, and so far as I can see, it's not leaking anything. You probably could drive it.
I got behind the wheel, backed off the sidewalk, and slowly drove away.
Just like new, Lula said, except for that big dent in the front and the mold smell coming from the back seat.
Winkle has a high bond. If I could bring him in, I might be able to buy a car.
I could help you, Lula said. I'm good at picking out cars, and I got connections.
Winkle is out here somewhere, I said. Eventually he'll go home. I'm going to ride around a little and then stake out his house.
I don't think I can charm him again, Lula said. I got a headache. I bet I got a big bump on my forehead.
If we find him, we won't fool around. We'll rush him and stun him right away. After we get him trussed up like a Sunday goose, I'll call for help transporting him.
Remember how you told me it was illegal to stun gun someone?
Extenuating circumstances, I said. And we're going to lie about doing it.
You bet your ass, Lula said.
I was two blocks from the police station. A low-income residential neighborhood sat between Winkle's Stark Street apartment and me. Streets followed no logical pattern, and it was easy to get lost in the maze of modest two-story houses that were smashed together on tiny lots.
He had to cut through this mess of houses, Lula said. You need to turn here.
After 10 minutes, I was completely confused.
We're going around in a circle, Lula said. I keep seeing the same houses.
I don't know how to get out of here. It doesn't matter if I turn left or right, I still get back to here.
You need to pull your map up.
Lula looked at my dashboard.
Hold on here. You haven't got a map. You haven't got no screen at all. How old is this car?
I stopped at a cross street. You should be able to get a map on your smartphone.
Okay, I have us on the map. We're the little red dot. Looks to me that you turn right at the next street and go as far as you can until you come to a T intersection.
I turned right at the corner, and half a block away it looked like King Kong was lumbering down the street.
That's Winkle, Lula shouted. Run him over.
I'm not going to run him over. I'm going to drive up behind him. We'll jump out of the car and take him by surprise.
How about you? Lula asked. Do you have a stun gun with you?
It's in my messenger bag. She got my stun gun out of my messenger bag and handed it over to me.
Power up, Lula said.
Winkle had freed himself from the plastic cuffs and was ferociously huffing along, eyes focused forward. I jerked to a stop about 20 feet behind him. Lula and I jumped out and ran. I reached him first and tagged him with my stun gun. He turned and looked at me, surprised.
What the?
He said. Lula pressed the prongs of her stun gun against Winkle's arm.
Zzz, zzz. That stings, Winkle said. Stop it.
He grabbed the stun gun from Lula and threw it across the road.
Hey, you big moron, Lula said. That's an expensive stun gun. It's not like they grow on trees.
Winkle backhanded her and knocked her off her feet. I shoved my stun gun into my sweatshirt pocket and pulled out the pepper spray. Hey, I said to Winkle. He turned to look at me, and I sprayed him in the face at close range. I jumped back away from the toxic cloud, catching a small amount of spray, uncomfortable but not incapacitating.
Yo!
Winkle yelled, hands to his face, rubbing his eyes, making it worse. He staggered back off the curb, lost his balance, fell into the street, and started rolling around. Lula and I were standing back, not sure what to do with him. Unless she shot him or I ran over him, I couldn't see any way to get the plastic cuffs on him. A black rangeman SUV pulled up beside us, and Hal got out. Hal was a good guy who looked a little like a stegosaurus. He was one of Ranger's most competent men, unless he saw blood. Hal tended to faint at the sight of blood.
What have we got here?
Hal asked. He's FTA, I said. I gave him some pepper spray, but I can't get him cuffed.
No prob,
Hal said. Hal got cuffs and shackles from his SUV and brought them to Winkle, who had managed to get to his feet and was bellowing like an enraged bull gone nuts. Hal kicked Winkle's feet out from under him and had him hogtied in 15 seconds. Winkle's eyes were red and watering, and he was covered in snot. Hal hoisted him to his feet and held him at arm's length.
"Do you want me to take him in for you?"
Hal asked. "Yes," I said. "That would be great. Thank you. We'll follow you and take care of the paperwork."
"Lucky us that you came along,"
Lula said. Hal jerked Winkle over to the rangeman SUV, trundled him into the back, and secured the ankle shackles to iron rings bolted onto the SUV's floor.
"The control room saw that you kept going around in circles and asked me to check on you,"
Hal said.
"I was doing a patrol in the neighborhood anyway."
We stopped at Cluck and a Bucket on the way back to the office. I got a hot and crunchy clucky meal, and Lula got a supersized bucket of cluck with the works. The works included mashed potatoes and gravy, biscuits, coleslaw, fried okra, and an apple turnover.
"I feel much better now that I have a good meal inside me," Lula said. "That whole Winkle thing was a depressing experience."
She swiveled in the booth and looked back up at the menu that was over the counter.
"I might need some ice cream as a palate cleanser."
She got a giant cup of soft serve, and we headed out.
"I still got a headache. I chipped some of my nail varnish, and I think I got a bruise on my derriere," Lula said. "I'm leaving early today."
"Are you okay? Do you need a ride home?"
"I'm not going home. I'm going to get my nail varnish repaired."
I parked in front of the bail bonds office, told Lula I'd see her on Monday, and took my body receipt in to Connie.
"I just got off the phone with Carol and Frida," Connie said. "Her son Mickey is an EMT, and he was at the ice cream plant this morning. Did you know another guy got frozen?"
"Ranger told me. The man's name was Gus. He was the foreman on the loading dock. I worked for him yesterday."
"The whole thing gives me goosebumps. I have an uncle who whacks people for a living, so I'm not exactly squeamish about murder, but there's something really disturbing about these ice cream killings."
"Did Carolyn have any information on how it happened?"
"Just that the door lock had been jammed somehow. One of the people on the line tried to get into the freezer this morning, and the code wouldn't work. I guess eventually they forced the door open somehow, and that's when they found this poor guy, frozen solid. Mickey was one of the first responders. He said there was nothing anyone could do."
I couldn't help grimacing when I asked the question. "Did Mickey say if the man was covered in chocolate and nuts?"
"That was the first question I asked, too," Connie said. "No, no chocolate or nuts, just frozen."
Okay, I felt a little better about it all. It was sad that Gus got frozen, but at least he wasn't turned into a Bogart bar.
"If I was working at that ice cream factory, I'd quit," Connie said. "There's a homicidal lunatic running around loose, and I for sure wouldn't go near the freezer."
I was going to do exactly the opposite. I was showing up for work at the ice creamery tomorrow, and I'd probably be in and out of the freezer. And I was doing it because that's the way it is. Ranger and I wade in and try to make things a little more safe. Morelli did that, too. not to mention that I was pissed off at the whole Bogart bar issue. Lula went home with a headache and a chipped nail, I said to Connie. I'm taking off, too. I have some homework to do. I got my check from Connie, and I drove my dented piece of junk back to my apartment building. I said hello to Rex, got a beer from the fridge, powered up my MacBook Air, and downloaded Ranger's report on Butchie. William Boone, better known as Butchie, was 22 years old. He was born and raised in Barrie, Vermont. His mother was a cashier in a supermarket. His father was an unemployed auto mechanic. Butchie graduated from high school and disappeared for 3 years. Interviews with relatives suggested he was in Nashville trying to break into the music industry. He resurfaced in Trenton and got a job at Bogart Ice Cream. He had no arrest record. His credit score was non-existent. He bought his F-450 6 months ago, and he'd paid cash. It was estimated that with the custom additions, the truck was worth in the vicinity of $60,000. He was making $20 an hour at the ice cream plant. Clearly, Butchie had supplemental income. He was high on my list of suspected homicidal lunatics. He had all the right access. He had unexplained money. And it was hard to believe he was as stupid as he seemed, because he seemed unbelievably stupid. According to Butchie's employment file and Ranger's research, Butchie lived on the edge of the burg. He was renting a house on King Street. I couldn't place its exact location, but I knew the area. It was typical burg, mostly blue-collar, small cottage-type houses on tiny lots. It was Friday night, and I traditionally had dinner with my parents. Morelli had a standing invitation to join us, but he usually begged off. I couldn't blame him. At some point during the dinner, the inevitable question of marriage would arise. I had no good answer. My mother called at 4:30. "Is Joseph coming to dinner?" she asked. "I'm pretty sure he has to work," I said. "I think it's only going to be me." "It's just as well. Your grandmother invited some stranger. She said she met him at Bertha Webster's viewing, and he might be the man of her dreams." Okay. I know this sort of thing drives my mother nuts. She worries about my grandmother. I don't worry about Grandma so much as I do about the rest of the world. It seems to me Grandma is living la vida loca. Truth is, I'm a little jealous. It looks to me like she's having more fun than I am. Chapter 16. I left my apartment at 5 o'clock and drove to the burg. I wound around the jumble of streets and finally found King. Butchie's place was a little box of a house in the middle of a block. One floor, probably 2 bedrooms and 1 bath. Detached single-car garage. It wasn't a total shambles, but it wasn't in immaculate condition either. The paint was peeling around the windows. The postage stamp front yard was clean but barren. No shrubs, flowers, gnomes, or plaster statues of the Virgin Mary. Butchie's truck was in the driveway. I stared at the truck for a bunch of beats. It was chilling to think that it might belong to a killer. Even more creepy that the killer might be Butchie. Butchie wasn't on my radar when I was working the loading dock, but he was a big blip on the screen now. I slowly cruised down the street and made my way to my parents' house. I parked in their driveway because the front of my car was less visible there than it would be at the curb. My mother was at the door with my grandmother when I stepped onto the porch. "What happened to your car?" my mother wanted to know. "It got a little smushed," I said. "It doesn't matter. I'm getting a new one." "What kind are you going to get?" Grandma asked. "Are you going to get a Corvette? I think you should get one like Ranger. His cars are hot." "I haven't thought about it," I said. "I'll have to see what I can afford." A chopper slowly rumbled down the street and parked in front of my parents' house. The rider was in full black leather with a long gray ponytail sticking out from under a black Darth Vader helmet. "There's my honey," Grandma said. My mother went pale. "He could be okay," I said to my mother. "He's probably a lawyer." "Nope," Grandma said. "He tends bar at Kransky's in North Trenton. His name's Bertie, and he's got tattoos all over the place." Bertie took his helmet off, hooked it onto the back of his bike, and walked toward us. "He reminds me of someone," my mother said. "Willie Nelson," I told her, "but I think he's older than Willie.
Willie's only in his 80s.
Bertie isn't that old, Grandma said. It's that the smoke in the bars aged him. He's still a handsome devil, though. Wait until you see him up close. He's got bedroom eyes. The one bedroom eye you can't see so much on